Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Frank Holmes and Aydin Kilic of Hive Blockchain. We talk about Hive's 2022, including the Ethereum merge and Intel-based Buzz Miner. Mainly, we focus on Hive's internal culture, including its focus on maintaining margins and controllable risks. Frank, Aydin, thank you so much for joining the Mining Pod. It's been a minute. We need to have you guys on the show for sure. We write about you quite often in our mining memo, so it's great to have both of you guys on the show. Thanks again.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and welcome our new CEO, Aydin Kilic.
Aydin, yeah, welcome to the show. Let's start off there. We were just actually talking about that, and I should have hit the record button, but yeah, it happens with podcasting. You don't always hit press the button in time. Let's talk about the leadership shuffle that just occurred. Frank, you were just explaining it to me. You built Hive with the idea of building a Bitcoin ETF, and then Hive came about. And now over the last few weeks, you guys have moved Aydin into the CEO role. You've moved back into the executive chairman role, both important purposes, but different focuses at Hive. Aydin, I'll hand it off to you, though, first. Tell me a little bit about Hive, and for our audience who might not be familiar with Hive, and then tell me a little bit about your new role as CEO.
Oh, to myself, yeah, absolutely. So Hive is a first public Bitcoin miner ever, actually. And when I saw Hive go public back in 2017, I thought it was actually a remarkable concept because I thought Bitcoin mining was the perfect business to be a publicly traded company and that, you know, you had access to growth capital, it's highly scalable, and, you know, you were creating, a scarce digital asset. So I actually founded my own company, took it public, ran as CEO for a few years. And Frank and I met on a panel in January 2018 in Vancouver. And it was interesting because it was the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference and Frank's photo was everywhere. I'm like, holy, I'm going on a panel with this guy. And Frank was very cordial and immediately I just thought like, wow, like he's a legend in the capital markets and we became industry friends. And, we'd navigated bear markets, 2019 and 2020. It was not a popular year to be a crypto miner. And then in 2021, we started collaborating in a more professional capacity. But really, Hive is a story of first. It's the first crypto miner ever to go public, first to be green energy focused, first to put data centers on the balance sheet, which Frank grew through some very strategic M&As in the last bear market by acquiring part of the Shoot facility and GP1. We were the world's largest Ethereum miner. We also are the first company to bring its own Bitcoin ASIC to the market. Well, we're not selling them, we're deploying them in our own data centers, and that's a collaboration with Intel. And so it's really a technology company, and we've been focusing on mining digital assets, but we are also looking at taking that to the next level, right? So we've been doing a bunch of heat recapture initiatives. So just this morning, I had a conference call with a NASDAQ-listed greenhouse developer based out of Sweden, and they're going to be building a greenhouse right next to our data center in Boden, and we're going to be using heat transfer technology to grow cucumbers and tomatoes, right? So we were talking about permitting and, you know, rights of access to get all the infrastructure sorted out. We also have a fledgling HPC project because we have one of the world's largest fleets of NVIDIA data center GPUs. And so we're actually earning revenue from this, but we haven't really started talking about it in the media yet. So there's so many things, exciting things happening in the Hive multiverse. It's really about, getting the story out there so people can understand. Like, we have an amazing team of coders, our network technicians. And, Frank has just been a legend in the capital markets for decades upon decades. So with his stewardship as an executive chairman our decentralized, no pun intended, team of, crypto miners, we're in Sweden, we've got coders in Croatia, we've got guys in Montreal, New Brunswick, Iceland. It's a very unparalleled team, in my opinion. And so it's a privilege and honor to be working with everybody.
Well, thank you for the profile there. Frank, I'll hand it down to you. Same sort of question. Just like, what's been going on with the change, the leadership change, and what are you focused on now?
I was only, I took on the responsibility of being the interim CEO because it was a crypto winter, and it was about, surviving with the CFO and one other person in Europe to turn around this company, and we did. And so when we started to grow and make acquisitions, in particular the GPU one, we just realized, we had to beef up the team. But something else that we did before GPU1 came along is we partnered with the utility company to do standby. So they needed electricity, and they paid us. We were first, it became free cash flow. And then I had started doing it in Texas. But for us, it was another source of income coming in, just like the HPC. So the HPC is doing $2,000 a day. It's nothing. But when it hits $10,000 a day, it's $300,000 a month. Okay, now we'll talk about it as being really, in our financial, because it moves the dial. My rule of thumb is we'll move the dial by a penny. So we need to have about $900,000 of revenue. You got to think of it, that's now a penny. So until we get to that number, that's sort of the disciplines. But I was thrilled about setting up, because I come from the mutual fund world and ETFs. We live in a world that's very structured, and there are lots of governance and et cetera. So some of those things have, been embedded into Hive. And I think that some of the other mistakes from other companies, especially in the lending world, the shadow banks of the world, there was no governance. So Hive has great governance. And we also started the discipline of agility management, formalized, of how do you build out software, and you have scrums and you have huddles. And so one of the things we do every day is that we huddle every morning over 7 time zones for 30 minutes and want to know what machines are plugged in, why they're not plugged in, what was our production every day. And it creates a focus, real focus. And then everyone goes on going out to build the business. And so from that end, I create this structure, and Aydin, as being an engineer, has embraced it. He has shown great leadership in the GPU1 acquisition and building out the facilities. And so now it's time for me to step back and for him to be the CEO of a business. And I'm so delighted and thrilled that he's hungry, he's ambitious, and he's very thoughtful. So this helps us to position us to go to the next level.
Let's go back into 2022. For those who are still learning about Hive or interested in what you guys have done, 2022 was obviously very tough for a lot of Bitcoin miners. You guys excelled during that, even though there were some things that could have been a problem, right? So one thing that came up during the year was the merge. And as you noted, you guys were a big Ethereum miner and you guys had to transition away from that mining revenue. Let's start there. Let's talk about the merge and moving away from Ethereum revenue. And then after that, let's talk about the Intel chips, which you guys have already mentioned. But Frank, I'll throw it back to you. Tell me about the Ethereum mining pathway and how you guys got there, and then what it looks like right now.
Ethereum is such a high profit margin business, and it was very simple and easy for us to manage. And we didn't think the merge would come through until probably 23, because it'd been going on now for 5 years. It was going to come out all the time. And so we just stayed focused on it. But when that journey, when it started heating up, we started pivoting of saying, what are these new chips worth? What are the NVIDIA chips worth? And so can we create another source of revenue from them? And that was the whole idea of the HPC. And we're happy. It always is. We haven't hired a bunch of people with it. It was slow getting off the ground. But we have 2 strategic partnerships in Europe. I would say 3. One would be, Vattenfall, the utility company. I would say Barrage out of Croatia, and Blockbase out of Vienna. And we talk every day. There is that huddle every morning, and then there's other meetings with it. So they are the ones that have been helping us do the pivoting from other sources of revenue, selling back our energy or balancing the grid, or now HPC.
Love that. Aydin, any other thoughts on Ethereum mining and transitioning away from that, maybe from an operator side?
The best way to think about having a real interesting understanding of Like you could say we're in the hash rate commodity business, right? That's how some miners describe it. And that's good if you're just focused on that one thing. But we actually are, you know, a resource management company in a lot of ways, because one resource we manage is energy, right? And if you look at our January production report, we were mining with ASICs, we were mining with GPUs, and we were also selling energy back to the grid. So we made 180 grand selling energy back to the grid. And that was more profitable than mining. And GPU, we were mining Bitcoin with our GPUs through altcoins. And then, of course, we're mining ASICs. If you look at December, we did 3.1 million of selling energy back to the grid. No GPU mining and ASIC mining, right? So we have these resources, and we decide, okay, are we going to divert the energy to hash rate through our ASICs, through our GPUs, or back to the grid?
Every day is a huddle for that.
Yeah. Every day's a huddle. Like our Excel spreadsheets would blow your mind, and in a good way. And we have so many hyper intelligent guys on the team that bring different skill sets. And then on the, in terms of professionalism as a public company, we also are hedging our energy contracts, right? So a lot of players who are getting fried and roasted when energy prices skyrocketed, you were seeing production numbers drop off, or people mining at a loss, or, you know, going bankrupt. We always put ourselves in a position where either if we could sell energy back to the grid for profit, or in some cases, if we can't, we ensure that our contract allows us to simply reduce our operating capacity, right? And the other resource is capital, right? So we deployed capital to buy 3,570 S19J Pros at an average price of $11 a terahash.
And a year ago, there were 111.
Exactly. And so the thing is the ROI that you should be solving for as a mathematical equation when you're a crypto miner is primarily, it's a multivariate equation, right, that we model in 3D. And the primary variable is your CapEx on your ASICs, moreover than machine efficiency, moreover than your electrical price. And so we always solve for our best ROI. That's why we have the highest return cash flow on invested capital, right? Because if you can't just go to Mr. Market and pull the lever and get another $100 million, are you going to make your money back on what the investment that you made? That's what you have to think. And not all the crypto miners are doing that. And as you can see, that's why so many people go bankrupt. And people say it's economies of scale. No, it's economies of efficiency. You can be 1,000 megawatts and unprofitable, or 100 megawatts and profitable. Which one do you want, right? It's like the bigger they are, the harder they fall. The biggest of the big went bankrupt this year almost, right? And so it's understanding the intrinsic hash rate economics of crypto mining. And so deploying capital is another thing, but we still grew. So for example, in 2022, we mined an equivalent, we mined digital assets equivalent of Bitcoin, 4,752 Bitcoin, 4,752 Bitcoin. Okay. The year before, we did 4,032 Bitcoin in 2021. We mined the most crypto in 2021 than any other public company. Anybody, Marathon, Riot, you name it, we mined more than them. Okay. We were the only one to mine 4,000 in 2021. In 2022, we had 18% growth. Think of that. That's a healthy growth number with no leverage. We didn't borrow any money. We didn't encumber our Bitcoin and get a bunch of margin calls and go bankrupt, or borrow $100 million on ASICs and then have to give them up because we can't afford the debt servicing. Because as you know, when hash rate economics thin out during a bear market, you know, in some cases you can mine at break even or a little bit of profit. If you have that much debt on top, you're going to go under, right? So yeah, we grow methodically to make money. Right. And when we did deploy capital, we replaced and upgraded a bunch of our legacy fleet. Because again, HIVE is a legacy miner, been around since 2017. Hut 8 and Bitfarms are also legacy miners. You got some of the new American names that came out of nowhere, raised $300 million last year, bought a bunch of S19s, didn't know where to plug them in. They're still in boxes. They bought them for $90 a terahash. We're buying them from them for $11 a terahash. That's fine. That's the game. But that's the game, right? You have to know the rules of the game if you want to win.
And we had a balance sheet to do it, and because we were really strict on the cash management. And I think the other part is in that equation, that lends itself. We started hearing rumblings in Texas. We started hearing difficulties this time last year, and we were going to expand into Texas, and we just started pulling back. You know, just let's be really cautious here, because there's just too many of these conferences, which are so helpful to attend, and you get gossip, and you have to put sunglasses on to try to, I guess the better word is arbitrage the information. And Texas became a crowded playground, and it became a problem. So we did duck that. And I think the other part is this idea of getting revenue from other sources. Really, we did investments in other companies, and we're always thinking of these other revenue channels. And I think that that's a big difference than just a Bitcoin miner. Because I considered earlier, one of the things I'm focused on as a money manager in a metric that's so key is cash flow return on invested capital. If you just buy the best stocks in any industry that is that have the highest cash flow returns on invested capital, they'll perform. And so our discipline in capital allocation, as I just said, is this model, the cash flow return on invested capital, is an overarching strategy when we take a look at other opportunities for, can this be a source of revenue for us?
So delving more into that topic and kind of staying with the Ethereum mining for a second, is this more of an operational question for you guys about like meeting in the morning, going through Excel spreadsheets, seeing where the margins are? Or is it on the flip side, on the production side, where you guys are making like really smart decisions with how you're deploying capital, how many people you employ, where you're putting your name down? Is it
all of the above? It's all of the above, right? Because the thing is once you deploy the capital, right, you have to monitor it, right? You have to have good uptime. So I talked about two resources. I talked about managing energy, where do you divert it, hash rate, selling it back to the grid. The second resource was capital. And the third resource is technology, right? So where do we apply our technology to optimize the business? So we did a massive overhaul in New Brunswick. We rebuilt our entire software stack. We sent a bunch of we bought some high-end Dell servers. Because here's the thing, managing 100 ASICs, 1,000 ASICs, 10,000 ASICs, right? You have different issues with scale, right? And so your system has to sweep tens of thousands. Like we have tens of thousands of ASICs now globally, and your system has to sweep. Because if you're just looking at the pool, you're not going to know what machines are offline. You know, yeah. I mean, it might say these workers are offline, but where the hell are they? Right? Yeah. So you have to have a local system, what I call the API level in the mine, right? And you have to have your MAC address, your location, your ASIC temperature, right? And ideally you should have a heat map to understand how the thermodynamics are all working in the facility. Yeah. But the point is, if you've got 10,000 machines and one of them goes dead, where the hell is it? And what's went wrong with it? You have to pull off the rack and repair the hashboard, or you just got to reboot it. And so it's having that software management system that allows us to also have the highest Bitcoin per exahash in the sector. So what happens is when you get to this scale, people talk about future projections and hundreds of megawatts and all these exahash. But the thing is this is like a civic grade allocation of resources. We have two substations at New Brunswick, a 30 megawatt and a 50 megawatt. Okay. We have high voltage engineers. We have power technicians coming out to service the substations. Back in the day, when you're running 5-10 megawatts, you're getting maybe a 4 kilovolt line from a utility company. Everything upstream from there, that's not your problem. That's utility company, right? So you've just got this little hut that you have to worry about, right? But when you're doing exahashes and, you know, you're pushing substations, you have a city to manage, right? And so you have to have not just data center technicians, you need infrastructure technicians. And that is where people are collapsing under their own weight. And how do you know this? Look at the Bitcoin per exahash figures put out month by month by month, okay? You would think that everybody would be within plus minus 5-10% of each other. They're not. You're seeing companies that are 40%. Like, we did 110 Bitcoin per exahash this month. Some of our peers, no names, are doing 64 Bitcoin per exahash. It doesn't make any sense. Why? Because they're mining.
But they're bigger. It's okay. They're bigger.
Exactly. Exactly.
But we have bigger cash flow because we get 100 and 100. You know, I think that's what Aydin is trying to share with you. And I think the morning, you know, the morning meeting is interesting because sometimes you want to vent. Someone wants to, you know, has a just wants to get something off their chest. And we listen to them. We say, okay, great. Well, we'll take that offline and we'll chat about that later. It's important. You're important to our team, but we'll talk about it later. And we keep this momentum. So when Aydin was out buying a bunch of these S19 Pros from different vendors, well, they're coming in. Well, where are they? Every day, where are they? Well, they're getting in attacks. They're in the zone. They're gonna be trucked up. But what day are they? Every morning, we are relentless in asking, you know, where are the machines? When are they gonna get plugged in? Because that's the life of a business. It's our oxygen. And one weekend, we had guys in New Brunswick get their own truck, basically load up a bunch of machines and drove for 8 hours to Lachute and plug them in. We're going to wait, and that'll be 2 weeks to get a contractor, either go move them and do all this stuff. No, now, immediately. And that cadence, that yeah. And then we give bonuses. Everyone gets bonuses when we meet Exahash. Every Exahash is a huge touchdown celebration for everyone. Mm. And our people come first. There's something about so important. And everyone's focused on that cash flow return on invested capital. When energy prices went through the roof, and in Canada they put a 25% tax on your gas tank, well, that really affects a lot of workers, right? It their cost within 24 hours. Okay, everyone gets $1,000 a month more. I don't want you to worry about putting gas in your car, food in your belly, and feeding your kids. I want you to worry about the machines.
Yeah.
and that's what we did. We pivot so quickly.
Yeah.
And that's because of our structure. And I think Aydin, you know, is just doing a wonderful job on pushing this culture. And I'm a big believer it's culture. We went to do diligence. Not gonna mention the other company. When we looked at another company, do we buy them? Yes or no? And what Aydin was sharing with you is really important. We went in and they didn't know what machines were off. They didn't even know.
Just we did diligence on a competitor. We were going to acquire an asset, a distressed asset. So we sent our guys in there and they're like, okay, well, your uptime's, pardon my language, trash. And so let's have a look. And so they said, you know, what's going on? So they walk around, they go, well, we'll just look for the red lights. What do you mean look for the red? Like it's like, I don't know.
Yikes.
Archaic, right? And so the point is they didn't have the software management system, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I was referring to when I said we updated our entire software stack. Because the thing is like your API calls, when you have that many machines, it needs to be fluid and it needs to be quick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is like, even if a company had a software stack that worked for 1,000 machines, you're going to need to upgrade that when you get to 10,000 machines, right? And this company in particular, they didn't even have that kind of stack. They're just relying on, you know, the staff to go around and look for red lights. And so this is where you're seeing the difference. You got to look at the companies with the best Bitcoin per exahash. You've got to look for the companies that have, how are they managing their balance sheet as well, right? Because, you know, as a crypto miner, you've got some companies that are just going 100% HODL, and 100% sell our Bitcoin. And if you talk to an investment banking analyst, they're going to say, well, you've got to, management has to exercise some discretion and it's got to fall somewhere in the middle. And that's what we did, right? So we sold Ethereum, which was such a high yield, high profit margin business. And we use that to leapfrog in our ASIC business, right? So we could grow faster. Ethereum mining is more complicated. Guess what? We love challenges, right? Oh, the merge is coming up. Guess what? Everyone was like, oh, you guys are going to turn off all the GPUs and everything's going to become obsolete. You know, I was trying to tell them, I'm like, guys, you have to understand hash rate economics. There's going to be a recoil effect as all the different miners migrate to different altcoins. It's the guys with the most efficient machines and the cheap power. It's a last man standing analogy. There's always a revenue floor in crypto mining. The whole thing won't fall dead on its feet. And surely enough, what happened? After the merge, we repurposed all our GPUs. We started mining altcoins in a profit maximizing.
So, but we do it with, there's a compliment of what Aydin's saying, sorry to interrupt Aydin, is that we take this GPU chip and you layer on artificial intelligence and it goes out to all the altcoins and it just mines for minutes, whoever is the most profitable, immediately converting into Bitcoin. And all of a sudden, and when anytime you get a rally in Bitcoin, the altcoins outperform. So therefore, you get this huge expansion in your profitability.
Yeah, I get that.
So we're using, we have some old GPU chips that are like antiquated, like me. And it's amazing that we put those things to work and they're making money for us. But it's the AI component, which you have to add on to it. So that's the creativity I'm just sharing with you is we got A and we got B. How we put them together to get one on one? Can we make a lap?
I love the focus on the small things. I want to pivot and ask you about the Intel chips. And I think it sort of falls within the thread of our conversation, honestly. That was seen as like an interesting move. Like I remember when that Intel announcement came out, there was like Block was going to buy them, Argo, you guys, I think Grid at one point was involved with this. And people are wondering like, are they gonna get that machine or is it just the chip? Seems like you guys were the first to really get that allocation and deploy them and you had to make your own machine, right? So how does that fall into line with your guys' ethos of like keeping control of the small things, keeping control of margins, being up to date on all the infrastructure inside your buildings? Because building your own machine, like that's a lot of risk, right?
A lot of risk. I'll share with you as an outsider is I was so thrilled to see the passion and the curiosity and the drive by Aydin and Bill going back and forth with our in-house counsel, Gabe, who joined us from GPU1. I stay up there late at night, 2 o'clock in the morning, calls with China, making sure, and then negotiating back with Intel. The leadership of Aydin on spearheading that with Bill Gray and Gabe was unbelievable. And so I'm really honored to see this young team gel like this and work all day, get up early morning for Vancouver, 7 a.m. call is the first call. And then 2 o'clock that night, 2 a.m., is now talking to China. And so other people thought, oh, it's really easy. We'll just send it over here. Capital markets are so easy to get money from that there was so much money wasted just buying Bitmain machines. And there was one place, 65,000 of them were sitting on the floor.
Yeah.
For instant year, for almost a year. So you just see a sort of mismanagement, whereas we have anxiety butterflies in our belly if they're sitting around not doing something. But Aydin is the guy that's really did a wonderful job with the Intel. And now other people want our Buzz Miner.
The approach we took is, so first of all those companies you named, they were all proponents. They all had the same opportunity that we did, but we were first. And we were the only ones who've executed so far. And moreover, we're the only ones who've got 130 terahash miner. And that's very important for several reasons, just in execution, right? That, like Frank said, everyone talks, a lot of people go raise money, but it's about actually executing. So I started my career off as a radio frequency engineer. I've been to manufacturing facilities in Korea. I've been to research laboratories in France, cutting edge stuff, right? And so I understand the entire process of prototyping on a test bench, you know, optimizing, developing a product for mass production. And then there's something called factory engineering. Factory engineering is its own discipline. Okay, so there's hardware, mechanical, software, firmware, radio frequency. Okay, all discipline, they're factory engineering. And you have to understand the controls and processes at the factory. Doesn't matter if you're making an iPhone or a mouse or a crypto miner. And so what we did was we hired a QA engineer, 20-year industry veteran, and he quarantined for 3 weeks. And then he lived in the factory town at the factory so we could implement our own physical test rig controls and processes, right? And we also worked with an established ODM that Intel had rapport with. But the other companies, from what I heard, or what they were telling me, is that they're like, yeah, we're going to do an immersion. We're going to do a solar powered. Like, it's like a mousetrap on a unicycle and you don't even have the wheel figured out yet. Like, what are you talking about, right? It, like, you're going to do a flying car with, like, you know. And so the thing is I'm like, let's build the Model T Ford. Let's perfect it. Let's crank out 5,000 of them. And then, you know, if you want to build a convertible or you want to put a cool spoiler on it or whatever, we could do that. Right. And so this is the thing, right? Like the reason why Hive is first is because we take the first step and we land our ETH securely. Right. And so even just getting back to our 22 production numbers, you know, in 2021, nobody really made much Bitcoin. And so in 2022, people said, oh, we grew 600%, we grew 800%. I said, yeah, but you grew from nothing. So of course you're going to have this huge number, right? And at what cost? So the thing is you talked about risk, and you know, where I see risk, if you don't take control of your own destiny and you don't get vertically integrated, is you're at the whim of the Chinese manufacturers, Bitmain, Ryko, BT, Canaan. Well, guess what? Try buying ASICs in a bull market. The reason why people blow their brains out paying $90 a terahash is they're like, shit, we raise all this capital. The bankers are expecting us to go ahead and deploy. We made this colorful, pretty chart showing we're going to be at 10x a hash by the end of the year. By the way, Mr. Market's going to reward us if we just do more future projections. And it just got into this massive greater fool theory of, you know, how much ASICs can we tie up? It almost became like an ASIC proxy game where it's just like, yeah, let's raise enough money, spend all the money on that first deposit. Oh, shoot, we still have 30, 40% left to pay. And then everybody got in the glue, right? So we're all about methodical, successive, and effective expansions. And the great thing about our deal with Intel is that it was a fixed price supply agreement that blew the economics out of the water and everything else, in addition to them being a Fortune 500 company, in addition to us having granularity down to the operating frequency of the ASIC. So we were able to look at the entire dynamic range of this product, and we studied the thermodynamics, we studied the electronics, and we really pushed the envelope. There was things that Intel just could not know on themselves at the laboratory level. We've deployed thousands of these things and we give them feedback. Right. And so now in the future, we'll be able to have nice, stable, fixed price supply chain. And again, look, when we get that, so it's kind of like a hedge. It's like an option, right? It's like, this is our fixed price that we know we can buy at, right? It's like energy, right? And when the market dips, right, and we can buy stuff at $11 a terahash, thank you very much. When the market goes crazy and things are $100 a terahash, guess what? We've got our nice, flat, stable. Yeah. Although technology, this was two resources, technology and capital, right? So it's actually risk management, not taking risk.
A follow-up question, if I can, on Intel, and I don't know if you guys are able to answer this, but I'll ask it anyways. How frustrated were they having to work with companies that didn't, you know, end up buying these chips, or they made announcements for allocations and then didn't do anything with them? Because
we don't know, because we came through, we delivered. So I guess it's kind of like, you know, asking the guy who just crossed the finish line at a marathon, what's it like to not finish the race? So I don't know. We crossed the finish line, right? I can only imagine it was frustrating for them.
Yeah. Probably more frustrating was the crypto winter.
Yeah.
There are so many external forces, and we showed that we didn't falter. You know, we toned back, you know, we pulled back on the sheer size we had. We renegotiated, but we never, ever stopped that we're going to deliver this product.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's shows the fortitude of the Hive management team. And the ingenuity in a bear market. It's easy in a bull market. But now what are we going to do to grow? What are we going to do to grow the business? Because something that really shocks me when we were doing our press release last week is the difficulty has surged 50% in the past year.
60, so, yeah.
Yeah, the difficulty, you know, that means there's more competition. Well, where's it coming from? What countries are it coming from? We know it's not Texas. We know it's not, you know, these other places. So, and how long will this last? Well, we lived through this with Ethereum. We couldn't believe how fast Ethereum's difficulty was rising. And we were scrambling, saying, okay, how do we manage this issue? And so we feel we're back into that managing the Ethereum drama of the coin was going up, but so is the difficulty rapidly. And how do you maintain your margins? So that's something, you know, for this year, it is that Bitcoin goes back to 40,000. Just think of where the difficulty is going to be.
Definitely. And that's a great place to turn the conversation as we like start to close, is what does 2023 build for you guys? I mean, like you said, difficulties go only going up, and it's becoming more pressing, and there's a lot of other players buying cheap ASICs right now and finding places to plug them in.
We're going to have a lot of due diligence on acquisitions and looking at things, and they just weren't attractive. We have a very winning management team, and we're not going to have that diluted. That's just how we focus. And so we will continue to do that. We are looking for other sources of good green energy. We do not want to go out and take a big risk. We had an ATM out, and we stopped it in November. So we were able to buy all those machines from internal cash management. And so we're much more focused on a gradual growth until there's some more clarity. And I said earlier that these cycles, these meltdowns, take at least 13 months before you get a real serious model. And we still don't have a lot of the regulatory pronouncements. And there's lots of this uncertainty in this ecosystem. Who else is going to go bankrupt? We don't know. So we're going to be very cautious and thoughtful and take 10 megawatts over there and 21 megawatts over here and retrofit them with these high-performing machines. And that's how we're going to grow. We're not going to go and say, okay, let's scale this to 80 megawatts and build something huge at this stage until the market gets some stability to it.
Love that. I know you guys have to run. Frank, Aydin, thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to the best for HIVE Blockchain, and hopefully speak to you both again soon.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you, Will.